Hello, and welcome back to the Every Child, Every Day podcast. I'm your host, Rob Arnold, Superintendent of Amherst County Public Schools. It's great to be back, as this is our first show since all schools in the state of Virginia closed. In the last 3 weeks, Amherst County Public Schools has been busy providing for the academic and nutritional needs of our communities. It occurred to me, however, that these were not the only supports that we should be providing to our community. This pandemic has created a real sense of uncertainty, fear, isolation, and anxiety in our community. Understanding that emotional health is extremely important, I have asked three Amherst County school psychologists to join me today to discuss how to help our children deal with these feelings during this unprecedented time in our history. Please join us. So today we're trying something a little different. In order to meet the guidelines for social distancing set by the governor, we're conducting this podcast via phone. So things might be a little shaky, so please bear with us. I would like to welcome our guests, Martha Anderson, Shannon Abaticola, and Jeff Williams. These individuals make up our school psychologist team. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, so what we will do, we'll just kind of go in order, and so that way we don't trip over ourselves when we talk about these things. So I'm gonna start with Jeff. What are some of the signs that your child is struggling emotionally with this pandemic? So what should parents be looking for?
Well, I think it's important to note that having stress and anxiety with events being as they are now, it's perfectly normal. In fact, I'd be shocked if folks weren't having some anxiety related to this COVID-19 situation and all the related changes in our lives. So it's normal. And I think the signs and symptoms are going to vary depending on lots of different variables. Certain personality characteristics of the child. And you can look at them in terms of behavior, physical, some cognitive symptoms. So, and also by age, and the characteristics and the signs of anxiety are varied depending on the age of the child. Some of the behavioral characteristics that you might see, and many of these are based on definite noticeable changes from what is typical, and parents are going to know how their children typically are, so noticing any specific dramatic changes. Mm-hmm. So behaviorally, you might see a significant increase or decrease in the amount of energy or activity level they're exhibiting. An increase in irritability. You may see more frequent and more severe outbursts of anger, becoming more argumentative. If they tend to isolate more so than they typically did before, that might be a sign of excessive stress and anxiety. Having trouble relaxing in general or sleeping. I can't stress the importance of sleep in any given day. But if you notice a disturbance in sleep, having nightmares where they just can't fall asleep or they're sleeping excessively, that could be a sign. Having difficulty communicating, just typical thoughts and ideas that could be related to this, particularly with the younger kids in preschool and early elementary, you might see excessive clinginess. And some of that could be related to what they know about the situation. For instance, a child might be more clingy than typical because they are scared that their parent who's going out to work or to get some necessary things at the grocery store to come back and get infected because they hear that people are getting infected and that, right. and that people are dying, and that could increase the level of clinginess that you would see there. And that's going to be especially true for children who have some separation anxiety issues already. A lot of students and children are going to have some somatic complaints or basically complaining about how well they or how poorly they feel. It could be related to stress and anxiety, gastrointestinal issues, stomach aches, headaches, just other aches and pains that you can't really put your finger on as to where they might have originated due to some type of injury or some other type of illness. You might notice that their appetite has changed significantly. They're eating more, eating less. You might also see just an increased startle reflex than you typically saw before. I think when you're talking about, you know, emotional reactions, it's in addition to the anxiety, what goes along with that is some depression or sadness and grief. A lot of our kids and a lot of our adults are missing out on so many different things, opportunities, celebrations. I can't imagine what our seniors are going through right now with all the, with graduation specifically, but all the things that lead up to that and to rite of passage to the next phase of life. And they're missing out on that, birthday parties. My middle son is turning 10 next week and there's not going to be a party for him. And he's adjusting well to that. He gets it. But at the same time, I know it's affecting him.
Sure.
And you might also see some cognitive thinking difficulties. And what I mean by that is concentration, difficulty remembering things, difficulty making decisions, thinking clearly, those types of things.
Jeff, do you find that older, like teens, react a little bit differently? You know, a lot of the things that you were talking about were either kind of universal or for younger kids. What are, you know, because in a lot of cases, teens become a little bit more aloof and not as forthcoming with their parents. And so what, is there anything that we should be noticing about our teen children?
Well, a lot of teens typically like to, separate themselves anyway. They're going through this stressful phase of life anyway. We're talking even the preteens, you know, the early adolescents, sixth and seventh graders, they're starting to feel that independence, or they feel the need to be independent. And so there's a balance there between gaining independence and getting independence. So there's that struggle there. Now, in this situation, that independence, that freedom that they get at times during the school day, it's just taken from them.
Right.
But you might see increased frustration and arguing and even possibly some physical conflicts with parents or with siblings. Some of that is, you know, normal, but you might see an increase in that. So, yeah, I think, you know, as I said earlier, the signs and the symptoms are going to vary by age. I think you definitely have to be careful with teens and be hypervigilant and cognizant of any changes that you see in how they're responding to this.
Yeah, and so and really the key is knowing your child to begin with so you can see the changes right. in their behavior.
Absolutely.
So, Shannon, let's jump over to you maybe to talk about the next part of this, and that's, you know, once you've recognized some of these signs in your child, how should you discuss this crisis then with your children? And maybe can be age specific, because obviously you'll want to talk to a teen maybe different than you would a 5-year-old.
Right. Well, I think one thing that's important when you're going to be talking with your children before that even, you have to keep your own emotions in check. It's very easy for adults right now to be stressed, worried about finances if you're out of work, worried about contracting the virus or your older family members contracting the virus. And kids really pick up on the stress and anxiety that their parents are experiencing and demonstrating. So we really want to keep our own emotions in check so that our children stay calm as well. If they see us worried, they're going to worry more.
Right.
But when talking with children, when you see that your child appears stressed, sit down with them, try to make eye contact. You know, with younger children, you want to get down to eye level and sit calmly with them and just be a good listener. You know, ask them, what are you feeling? What has you feeling stressed? Is it worried about, are they worried about the virus? Are they stressed by not being in school? Are they sad that they're not seeing their friends? There are many things at play right now besides just worrying about contracting the virus. So being a good listener means paying attention to what your child is saying, being focused on them, not doing other things, really giving them your full attention, and reflecting back what you hear them saying. So you may say, I hear you. I know it's hard. I know you're missing your friends. And you're worried about getting sick. Just let them know that you hear what they're saying. And don't dismiss their emotions. Allow them to feel what they're feeling. It would be easy to say, you know, there are people dealing with a lot bigger issues in the world. But you don't want to take that away from them and say, you know, you need to just deal with it. People are dealing with worse things. That would be not validating how they feel. And how they feel is okay. We want to listen, validate their emotions, let them cry, let them feel, show them understanding. For your younger children especially, you may need to help them label their emotions, whether they're feeling anxious, worried, scared, sad. It may be hard for them to really identify what their emotion is. You can help them express emotions through, you know, conversation. You can help them get their thoughts and feelings out through journaling, drawing. Younger children that aren't yet writing may be able to express some of their emotion through drawing or even through play. And by sitting and playing with your children with figurines or whatever, you may be able to work through some issues and help them resolve some of their fears. Maybe they want to play doctor and sort of play out some scenarios.
So really, you know, just being aware that their feelings are real to them, right? And, so, you know, we were, you know, in thinking about how to talk to our seniors about, you know, this loss of the ability to go through a graduation ceremony or go to prom and those kinds of things. And the thing that has troubled me all along is you see these people talk about, well, there's so much terrible things going on in the world. You guys should just get over it. And I don't think that that's the right way to approach this, that, you know,
Definitely not. They
have lost something. The most important things to them, they have lost, and we have to be able to acknowledge that.
Right. And for those that would be graduating or going to prom, those aren't things they can recreate later in life. So that is a big loss.
Yeah.
Also, when you're, you know, it's easy for us to have the news on and get overwhelmed by a lot of the negative aspects. I think it's important to limit exposure to the news and talk about the coronavirus, especially with really young children.
Okay.
And focus on what things we do have control over to help ease anxiety, talking about social distancing and, you know, staying home, cleaning, and washing hands, things that we do have control over to help them have that sense of control and knowing that there are professionals in the community keeping things clean, developing immunizations. All the proactive things and all of the positive things that are coming from this and how it's making, bringing out, you know, the humanitarian aspect of people, making masks for people and gathering supplies, feeding people. And that's another thing. There are a lot of financial strains right now, maybe focusing on the positives that are being offered, government stimulus checks, food banks, so that our children don't get overwhelmed by all of the negative aspects.
Yeah. Okay.
As far as like 0 to 5 year olds, they're not going to see to be as verbal. But just like I said before, just sort of helping them identify what they're feeling.
Does consistency obviously plays a role with that? I mean, because things are so uncertain.
Yes, keeping a routine, setting up, you know, a schedule for the day, especially Monday through Friday when they would be in school, keeping family routines, like eating lunch or eating dinner together, putting your children to bed, reading stories to them can help ease them into bedtime when they may be feeling super anxious laying in bed at night. So yes, definitely keeping routines and spending more time with your children, whether it's playing games or talking, but just being present, physically available to them, emotionally available to them.
And a lot of that takes a lot of effort these days, because it's so easy as an adult to think about your own problems. But, you know, as a parent, it's so important to kind of put yourself in your child's shoes and help them through this as well.
And when kids are doing homework and homeschooling, they're used to having a teacher explain things to them, and you may see them getting stressed with the schoolwork, getting overwhelmed, maybe even tearful. And it's important to notice when your child is getting overwhelmed and giving them a chance to just step back, take a break, go do something else, and come back to it.
Yeah.
To help them manage all of that stress and frustration that may come from the academics.
Yeah. So right now it kind of feels like we're kind of moving into what I really want to get to in the next question about what parents can do to mitigate, you know, the impact of the crisis. And so you had said just previously, you know, about having routine and those kinds of things. So, Jeff, would you like to speak more to kind of how parents can mitigate the impact of this crisis?
Yes, absolutely. And Shannon was kind of alluded to the importance of managing your own anxiety. And that's not thinking selfishly. It's just thinking practically that if you're not in a good place yourself, it's going to be hard for you to be in a good place and to help your child be in a good place. It's comparable to when you take a flight and the flight attendant says to you, you know, if we lose cabin pressure and the oxygen masks fall, put your own on first before you put your child's on. Why is that? Well, it's not because you're more important than your child. It's because if you lose consciousness, then your child's going to lose consciousness too. So that is critical. So it's important to take inventory of your own anxiety, your own mental health, be in a good place for yourself and be in a good place for your child. As Shannon said, if you're falling apart, your kids almost certainly will too. And another part of that is modeling. You know, you're helping them regulate their own emotions by being their parent. You know, they see you handling this stressful situation in a healthy way, and then they're more likely to mimic that and do that themselves, and just model your healthy reactions to the anxiety, and do so both verbally and also in your interactions and how you're dealing with it. And as you were just saying, Dr. Arnold, Shannon touched on the two routines. This is probably the most important, if not the close to being the most important thing to do. Sticking to a schedule, having a routine for kids, it gives them an expectation. And when that expectation is met, that in and of itself can be calming and soothing, because we're in a state of complete uncertainty, you know, in the big picture, but controlling what you can, controlling that schedule and adhering to a, you know, semi-structured schedule on Monday through Friday when they would typically be in school is paramount. And, you know, to that end, I mean, wake up, get dressed, eat breakfast at the same time, get dressed for school, even if you're not going to leave the house. Find an area that's non-distracting in the house so that their schoolwork can be done. It might even be worth considering getting a copy of their schedule and, you know, taking that as an outline as to how you want to structure the instructional part of the day, and even have a lunchtime in there, have a recess or PE. I would do it at the same time every day. That structure and routine, I think, is going to pay major dividends in the long run. We, you know, continue to deal with it. I would also, you know, again, to reiterate what Shannon said, limit the consumption of news, having a constant, you know, review of the number of infected, the number of deaths, just that tally throughout the day is probably not going to help anyone. I would even have parents consider just having the TV turned off during the day as if it doesn't even exist. Or if you want to take a break and watch the TV, show something that's fun.
Yeah.
Have kids laugh a little bit. Yes. It's okay.
And that's good good advice for adults, right? I mean, it's overwhelming what you can watch.
And I think you'll see a lot of the recommendations we're talking about is not just exclusively the kids. It's for everyone, really, because we're all experiencing this. I think being creative with activities and how you take all this other, you know, this additional extra time that you typically don't have, and using that to find opportunities to do things that maybe you didn't have time to do. You know, my oldest son plays trumpet. So he's, you know, we have that as part of his day is practicing his trumpet 20 to 30 minutes a day. I'm learning piano myself. So I have all three of my boys taking part in a piano program that I'm using to learn. And they're doing that 20 to 30 minutes a day. Typically we don't have time to do that,
right?
But they're enjoying it. So I'm glad to do that. Getting in the kitchen, baking, cooking, learning how to cook, taking this opportunity to use some of the free internet tools to learn a new language, spending as much time outside as you possibly can if the weather's permitting, because you're cooped up inside a lot more than you typically are. Daily walks, bike rides, hiking, just, you know, exercising in general is so therapeutic. These are the things we do normally to relieve stress and anxiety. Some of these things that can continue. Whereas we know a lot of the things that we typically do or find solace in or relieves our anxiety without even knowing, we can't do. So it's important to be creative when trying to come up with ideas and strategies to reduce that anxiety. Some folks, I know I personally haven't benefited from this, but I've read about research and I know a lot of people focus on meditation, doing things like yoga. Of course, you have old reliables like board games, card games, which I'm sure a lot of families are now going back in that route and remembering how much fun it was to do those things.
Yeah, my family.
Shannon mentioned that.
Yeah, we put up a puzzle together.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that created a lot of anxiety for me. I don't know. I just felt like I needed to get it done.
Especially the 1,000 pieces.
That's
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was my next idea, in fact, was having a jigsaw puzzle, but just spending 15 or 20 minutes a day on it, you know, and then covering it up with the dining room, something so that it doesn't get destroyed overnight. So those are the types of things that I think that can help mitigate the stress, finding productive ways to deal with some of this extra time we have. And lastly, and this, again, it's hard to put these in a hierarchy of what, you know, what's important, but socially, that I think that's where there's going to be some major struggles. My kids have mentioned how they miss seeing their friends.
Connections.
They miss seeing their friends at school. My boys miss their soccer friends who they don't attend school with, but they play on the team with. They miss kids that they see in their choir at church or youth group at church. And socialization plays such an important role in how we regulate our moods anyway, and just it keeps us grounded and connected. I'm pretty strict with screen time and just social media in general. My wife and I are both, you know, on the same page there. Our kids get, compared to any other kids, very little of that. We've had to loosen up on that here recently with the screen time. Of course, we continue to monitor.
Right.
We have our parental controls in place. So we're being responsible, but taking advantage of the good aspects of social media, the good aspects of this technology that we have, using these messenger apps, Skype, FaceTime, you know, whatever it might be, so that they can see their friends' faces, they can have conversations, it's not the same, but it's definitely better than not having that.
It helps.
And the same with family too. You might consider having grandma or grandpa read them a bedtime story via FaceTime.
Yeah.
Again, it's not perfect, but I think it does help us feel closer and stay connected. And going back to one thing I forgot to mention about that routine, I mentioned this earlier when I was talking about signs, is sleep. Sleep is critical. I would say that whether or not we were talking about, you know, anxiety or the situation that we're dealing with now, that's the one recommendation I put in every single one of my reports, is the importance of sleep and the impact that a proper sleep can have, the positive impact that can have, and relatedly, the negative impact that improper sleep or inconsistent sleep or lack of sleep, inadequate sleep can have on basically every area of life. So back to when you're talking about the daily routine, I would have that nighttime routine just as strict, ensuring that the kids are getting adequate sleep.
Absolutely. So Martha, let's let you jump in. And we've talked a lot about, you know, that these feelings are normal, but there becomes a time when these things might persist past where it's normal. And so if we ever get to that point, how should parents go about finding, or when do they recognize that point? And then how do they go about finding assistance?
Well, you know, as I think Shannon and Jeff sort of mentioned already, you know, when it, you know your child and their behavior, and it's normal for them to be upset for a little while, but if it persists to the point where it's disrupting their sleep and their appetite and interfering with the relationships, you know, within the household, and they seem excessively worried, it's probably a good time to start thinking about possibly getting some outside assistance. And in through that, what I mean is probably getting some counseling for your child.
Uh-huh.
The good news is most kids who are struggling with an emotional crisis will probably show improvement with only a limited number of counseling sessions. So they probably won't need long-term counseling. They may only need, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 sessions with a professional counselor. If you feel like your child might be in need of counseling, a good place to start might be by talking to your pediatrician or your primary medical care provider. You could ask them for a referral to someone that they think is reputable and trustworthy. Also, they're going to know your child, and they may know a therapist or counselor that might work particularly well with your child or with your situation. Another avenue would be that, you know, locally there are several counseling or mental health services in this area. And in particular, I wanted to mention Horizon Wellness Center, mm-hmm. and Amherst Community Health Center, and Blue Ridge Medical Center. These are all agencies that provide services. They, among their services includes behavioral intervention and behavioral health, which would be mental health or counseling services. And these are agencies that will either take private insurance, Medicaid, or some of them have a sliding fee scale, so that whatever they charge you will be based on what your family's income is.
I got you. Okay.
If I knew some of our students have private insurance, some have Medicaid, some may not have any sort of health insurance at all. Another option is if you are working for an agency or a company that offers an employee assistance program.
Okay.
That's a good, that's another really good place to start. You could, if you don't already have that information, you could go through your human resources department to get the contact information for that. But the way an EAP works is that you call and make an appointment, they meet with you, they find out about your situation, and then they can make a referral to a counselor that would work well with your child and someone who will work with whatever your insurance payment, you know, with whatever your insurance plan provides.
Okay. And if, of course, if worse came to worse and they just didn't know where to turn, they could certainly reach out to the counselor at school or their principal, who could maybe then point them in the right directions.
Sure.
Absolutely.
the one thing I would add is if you want to find a therapist on your own, look for the words child and adolescent therapist.
Okay.
If you're going to do this on the internet, and add in your zip code, because that's going to kind of limit, you know, the therapists that are closer to you.
Uh-huh.
And make sure that you're getting with a properly licensed professional. You should be either looking for the letters LPC or LCSW.
Okay.
The person should have a title after their name, such as licensed professional counselor, licensed clinical social worker, licensed psychologist, or licensed clinical psychologist.
Okay.
And you want to make sure that you're getting with somebody who's properly credentialed. And I would just add that I'm aware that some agencies and practitioners have started using telehealth or conducting sessions by Zoom or some sort of other format.
Mm-hmm.
So some people are able to participate in counseling from their home. The two things you want to make sure, if you want to make sure that whatever interactive software or platform that they're using, you want to make sure that it's compliant with HIPAA regulations.
Mm-hmm.
So you have confidentiality. And the others, you want to make sure that your insurance company will cover that type of counseling or therapy if that's what's needed. But definitely, you know, reach out to your schools if you need additional information. You know, we're all working. We're here for you.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll say, you know, we've probably done about 30, 35 of these podcasts. And I'll have to say that, you know, this isn't the circumstances in which I want this podcast to have to deal with. But I would say it's one of the most important sets of information that we've put out on this, because we really need our parents to understand how important it is to work on the emotional health of their child. This is different for everybody, and mm-hmm. You know, yeah. and it's a lot of information. And so I would just encourage folks that, you know, you can go back and listen to this. You can reach out to the different school people that we've talked about and different agencies that can provide you with help. Just understand that you don't have to deal with it on your own, even though you're probably limited to being indoors and with your children all the time. You're not alone. There are other folks out that are around that can provide supports.
Absolutely.
To you. So, anybody, go ahead.
Sorry. I just wanted to add, I mean, in the event that a family member is behaving in a way that's life-threatening.
Yeah.
Or harmful to others, absolutely consider that point. Call 911 and seek assistance that way.
Yeah. So take that, take those conversations very seriously.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you guys wanted to add to this conversation?
I would just add that as far as the activities, this is a good time to start a garden, teach your kids how to grow things. It's also a good time to teach your kids how to do routine household tasks if they don't already know.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
you just pray that the national forests and the trails don't follow suit with many other entities and close down.
Yeah.
That's where a lot of people are finding, you know, solace and normalcy.
The sun is helpful, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
For your mood. Well, guys, you guys were awesome. This is really important stuff. And so I appreciate you taking some time out and helping us with our new technology here. And so we appreciate you being patient with us. And to the listener, thank you for coming on today and listening to this. We are looking to continue to provide some of the resources that you might need during this pandemic. I believe next week we'd like to bring on some folks that can talk about your physical health and the ability to stay safe physically during this time. You know, today we talked about our emotional health. We want to really talk about our physical health the next time out. So please join us next week, and everybody have a great day.